Hey, everybody, it's me here, Michael Franti, on the Stay Human podcast. Man, we are super excited because we've got a new album that is coming out. It's called Work Hard and Be Nice. 17 songs, that's right, you heard it, 17 songs filled with optimism and stories about how we get through challenging times and still hold on to our humanity. We can't wait to get back out on the road with you guys, so stay tuned to all of my socials. You'll get the information first about when we're going to be touring next. In the meantime, enjoy all the songs on the album, Work Hard, Be Nice. You can Spotify it. You can stream it all over the place. You can download it on iTunes. You can even get the CD from michaelfranti.com. So check it out. Stay Human podcast here today, and today we have a very special guest, Abigail Stauffer.
Thank you. Right? Yes, thank you.
And we are here at Bliss Fest with an incredible studio audience. Studio audience, how you feeling? All right, let's get this podcast started. So I was here today, and you came up to me and you're like, hey, I'm the one who flew you in the acro yoga thing.
Put him on my
feet. Where was that?
Ann Arbor, Michigan. Auditorium.
I remember thinking like, okay, I know how to do some acro, but usually there's like a really muscly guy underneath me who's like pushing me up. And is this
lady
gonna be able to like get me up in the air? I'm 6'6", 225 pounds.
Yes.
And she hoisted me up with her feet, and mm-hmm. I felt like a beach ball. Like I was just like bouncing up and down on your feet up
Excellent.
There.
Excellent.
And so that's how we met.
Yes.
And then today here at Bliss Fest, you were like, hey, I'm playing a set at 3:30 on stage 3. And I came over there and I was really, really moved by your music. And that's why I've invited you here today. And we brought this amazing studio audience here to just find out more about you.
Excellent. All well, right. Thank you for bringing me here.
Yeah.
I'm glad I said hi.
So let's just start from the beginning. Where do you live?
I live right now in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I move around a lot, but I'm from there and I'm living there again.
Right now. So let's talk about the moving around a lot part. Was that like a childhood thing? Did you always
No,
move around
my
when
whole
kid,
childhood or? I lived in the same area, Dexter, Michigan officially, right by Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. But I love traveling. I love other cultures and other languages. I studied linguistics and I've been moving around all over trying to find like, where is home? Yeah. And I have recently decided, okay, home needs to be like roots. I need to have some foundation and a place to come back to, and then I can keep traveling.
Yeah.
And I can keep learning languages and I can keep having these wonderful other homes, but it really helps me to have roots and keep coming back to
So what was Dexter like when you were a kid?
What's White. That like?
White.
Okay. Farmers.
Okay, farmers.
Small.
Okay, yeah. So like how many people?
Don't ask me that because they'll look it up later.
Are you talking like 400 people?
No, more than that, but not by a lot. Like my high school had 1,000 people.
1,000 people.
It wants to be Ann Arbor.
So it's kind of like a smallish.
Yeah, it's pretty small
city.
Yeah,
and town. And when you say farmers, is that like the main industry of Dexter?
I think the main industry of Dexter is professors go there to live cheaper
to live
from Ann Arbor, Michigan, where the University of Michigan is. But it was farming.
At one
when
point,
I go
it was
on
all
Tinder,
farming.
It's fishermen.
Okay.
So. Hunters.
Well,
BMX a little bit.
Well, I gotta say, you brought it up. So, what's your Tinder schedule like?
I use it as a tour guide. So, I got to travel to Brazil with Dave, my amazing cellist.
Nice. We'll get Dave up here.
And Dave has all his friends and family and everybody in Brazil already. So, I decided to use Tinder. Like, okay, you're busy. I'm going to go on some dates. And that's what I do with Tinder.
And
I'm
like,
I'm in a new area. I met a tour guide in Brazil.
Okay.
And he said, he would try to show me something new. Mm-hmm. And I said, I went there. And he's like, Tinder date number 2. So he would try to show me something new. And I'm like, no, that was Tinder date number 4.
Oh.
Already done it. So Tinder has been a very excellent way of getting to know a new area.
Which is better? Dexter Fisherman Tinder or Ipanema Brazil banana hammock bikini?
Definitely Brazil. Like, okay. I got back to Dexter and I was like, who is that? And I realized it was delayed Tinder from Brazil.
Okay.
So no, definitely Brazil.
All right. So.
Sorry, Dexter. I'm sorry. I love you, Dexter, if you're watching.
We know there's love in Dexter, but let's talk about it. So what did you do when you were growing up as a kid? What were your interests? What were you into? What was your family like?
So my family, I have three older brothers, so there was a lot of, like, I'm strong for a reason. I'm the youngest and the only girl. We sang a lot. We sang in my house. We sang before certain meals. We had songs that we sang together depending on the time of year, religious customs, other things like that. And I thought everyone had that. And then I talked to friends and they're like, oh, we don't sing before, blah, blah, blah. And I just assumed, like, this is what everyone has. We sing before, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And not everyone does. And so I'm really grateful. Like, that's not the only thing we did, but we did a lot of that. We weren't particularly athletic.
What was your family's religious background?
We were Christian.
Okay. And like really serious holy roller Christian, like you went like, you know, Wednesday Bible study, Thursday quiet practice.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All the way until my senior year of college, I spent like 20 hours a week.
Wow.
Doing church things.
And was it conservative Christian or was it like a really open
We're
kind
going
of Christianity?
There. I'm doing this on the internet.
Yeah.
Potentially.
What's that?
Potentially this will be on the internet.
Yeah, it
what
will
I
be
say.
For sure.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, yep. It was very conservative. Yeah. I ended up falling in love with a woman.
Uh-huh.
And that was the big problem was, no, we don't do that. We don't do that in this church or family or whatever.
So
we don't
what
do
that
in
like?
This religion.
How was that revealed to the to?
I just
family?
Told everyone because in my experience prior,
like you
I
stood
could just,
up in church and went,
no,
hey.
Not, yeah, eventually, yes. Eventually, yes.
Anybody want to testify? Oh, I mean,
yes, I love her.
Did you go in to tell people in the church or did you tell your family first?
I told my pastor and I told my mom.
Wow.
And I just thought, like, oh, you tell the truth and that's what you do and that works out. And it eventually did, but it sort of briefly retracted my truth telling because telling the truth was very challenging.
Yeah.
Like I told it and I was like, fine. And then the after effects were not fine.
So what was that like? What were the after effects?
A lot of fear, probably more so than the real rejection or separation was the fear of rejection and separation. And I think that's probably a broad topic for anyone on any, regardless of if you date the same gender or not, like the fear of being rejected keeps you from actually connecting. So there were friendships that I lost because they weren't okay with who I was dating. And there were friendships that I lost because I was afraid to talk to them about it.
Wow.
And so I didn't, and then we lost touch.
Yeah.
And sometimes they said, why didn't you tell me? And I said, well, because I was afraid, and understandably so, based on XYZ.
And did they go, well, you should have just told me, I would have got it, or was it different?
Yeah, some people did. Yeah. I wrote songs about it. It was very inspiring in the worst way possible.
Well, let's talk about that part of it. So you grew up in this small town, you know, all white community, farming mixed with sort of professors in there. Very conservative Christian background, and then you fall in love with this woman. And how did this all lead into your music?
The music was there before any of it. And it kind of in the way that sometimes I look back and I say, I used to evangelize, and I used to be the person that now I'm like, stop having an agenda with me. But I'm like, I was that, but I was always me.
Yeah.
And music was always a part of my life as well. And then more things developed and I discovered more about myself, and I for a while looked back and I was like, oh, that was before I was me. And I've taken a while to realize, like, no, I was always me. I've become better versions, worse versions of myself, but I was me when I didn't realize I liked women, and I was me when I was pushing people a little too hard about my agenda, and I was me when I had a homosexual agenda too. I was me on all of those fronts, so I don't know what to say about it. I don't know. That's a lot of words.
So what's your goal? What is your musical mission? Like, not like I want to, well, maybe it could be I want to sell out Yankee Stadium or something. But what is your mission? Like, what's your purpose? Why do you make music?
I started making music because it made me happy. I write in journals because it helps me to process my thoughts and feelings and writing songs and playing songs has furthered that processing, and it's been really, really meaningful to work through my own struggles in a way that is useful to somebody else too. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is about me and my life. And then someone says, I feel like you wrote that about me and my life. And so I'm like, wow, I can do my work, and it helps someone else do their work too.
Yeah.
So I think that's mostly what it's about, and always wanting to be better. I never want to move backwards in anything.
Yeah.
And so it's about moving forward through difficult things to a better thing. And it's about moving forward to improve as a musician, musically and emotionally, and to do it as a community as much as possible, to say, like, let's go together. Like, let's get through these difficult things together. And if I can work at home alone and be like, oh, this is hard, I'm going to sing it. And then someone else is like, wow, that was hard in like the court, or that was hard in the classroom, or that was hard as a parent, and that also lets them get through that. That's
and helps
exactly what
their,
I want
their life through your music.
That's really great. Like, that's the best case scenario. I'm like, I dream that, like, me just like striving away in my little angsty room could actually be useful to someone who's doing other things. It's
nice.
What I would like.
What was the first time you got on stage? Like, church? Was it on the, you know?
It was, in college at an open mic.
Okay. Tell me about that. You just walked in and signed up and got up there?
And yeah, and I thought it was going to be fine, and then I was breathing.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to play some rhythm on my guitar, which is still difficult for me to this day, and I really didn't do it very well.
Yeah.
I thought that I totally failed. But I will never forget going up there and being like, I know this song perfectly. I know exactly how to play it. And then going up there and having all of that knowledge just slip from my fingers.
Yeah.
I feel like, what happened? I knew this song.
And did people respond in kind, or were they kind of,
I had friends who supported me.
Okay.
I don't know anything beyond like...
We've all had moments like that, by the way. When I was getting started in music, I had two bands before Spearhead. I had this band called the Beatniks, and we were like this punk rock band. We toured all over the country. Then I had Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy, and U2 loved one of our songs, and we ended up opening for U2 all summer long in like stadiums. And then I started Spearhead, and we went and we played this show. And it was, we wanted to be like a hip-hop band. Like, there were, at this time, there were no really like bands. Live music, live instruments. There was just DJs and rappers. And so we got on this bill with like KRS-One and MC8, who had just been in this big movie, Boys in the Hood. And Coolio, you know, Gangster's Paradise, and a couple other artist, and we go up there with this band, and everything else was like this DJ and the rapper there, throw your hands in the air, you know, everybody's getting all excited. Then we come on with the band, and they're literally like, we had a 25-minute set, and it felt like we were up there for 4 hours, because after the first song, these guys were in the audience, they were going like this, they're going, hook, get them off the stage. And I felt so dejected after having been like on tour opening for U2 in stadiums, and then coming up with this like new idea, like I want to start something fresh and new, and then completely falling on our face. Mm-hmm. And then from that, picking myself up and saying, I'm going to make the best band ever. We want to be like James Brown, you know? We want to be able to crush it, you know? Mm-hmm. So what did you do from that first point of like getting up there and sort of like, you know, God, I thought I did okay, but really my friends are here to support me. And then how did you pick yourself up after that and say, I'm going to keep going to do?
Hey, everybody, it's Michael Franti here on the Stay Human podcast. A few years back, my wife, Sarah, and I decided that we would start a nonprofit with the intention of bringing people with advanced stages of life-threatening illness, children and adults with special needs, and wounded veterans to see any live concert by any artist in any city in the world. And from that, Do It For The Love was born. If you have a friend or family member who needs music in that way, just write to us at doitfortheLove.org, and we'll make sure to get them out to see any concert in any city by any artist. Do it for the love, y'all.
Do this.
So I think there's two parts. There's a quote that I remember from childhood that's something like, shoot for the moon, and if you miss, you'll land among the stars, or something like that. So like, go for the best thing possible. But also something I'm still learning, and especially very recently, is that it's okay to go slowly. And so I've seen other people who were like behind me, if that's a thing in a mm-hmm. music career, who shot in front of me and are like at the top. Mm-hmm. But I'm going at a pace that, like, when I first started playing, sitting mm-hmm. was the only thing I felt comfortable with. And then standing was like a major, like, I'm going to stand and sing. And now mm-hmm. I play with a cellist.
Wow.
And sometimes we play as a trio. And like, that's a really big deal. And like, I recorded as a band, but to play regularly with a musician who is excellent is really one of the best things that I've done, is to say, okay, I'm going to move slowly, but I'm going to move slowly, and every step of the way, make the best choice I can. Just to nice. Play with someone who is recognized, who is acknowledged, and who I can learn from. Great. And like, okay, so playing as a trio is still considered small, and I'm doing duo most of the time, uh-huh. but duo is feeling so good. Yeah. And I'm not going to like rush ahead to like, let's do a 5-piece or 7 until I feel good at duo, and then maybe I'll move to trio. Mm-hmm. And then maybe, you know, like occasionally I'll have a little glimpse of what it might be like later on, but I'm moving slow.
Well, I saw you guys today, and I thought that just as the trio, it was super powerful and super full. I love the way you were playing the bass lines of the cello. I'd never heard that before, and then you started bowing it and sounded really cool. And you the ukulele, it is a ukulele?
Ukulele, okay. And guitar.
And, yeah. and that's like a really unique instrumentation, so I don't think you need 27 people.
So no, I feel really, good. Really, yeah. really good as a duo, and I feel awesome as a trio.
Awesome.
And we talk about that, and we say, okay, well, this is awesome as a duo, and it could be even better as a trio, but let's not sacrifice awesome for like, oh, but trio looks cool.
Well, let's check out some of your music. The only time you'll use first person plural.
Let's open up the studio audience here. Studio audience, do you guys have any questions?
I have a question.
Uh-oh.
Who's your top musical inspiration?
Right now or forever?
How about both? Right okay. now and forever.
Mm-hmm.
Great question, by the way.
Excellent. I like this applause. All he's right. great. He's good on the excitement. whew. I really, really like Lauryn Hill. I really like what she writes about. I like the fact that she's willing to disappear off the map for a long, long time. And I like that she crosses over genres. Mm-hmm. I like the genres that she exists in. I like that I disagree with a lot of what she has to say, and I still admire her. Mm-hmm. I think that's something really like, okay, mm-hmm. we're not on the same page on this topic, and I still admire you, and I still want to emulate you. So she's someone who I'll probably follow forever because we already disagree, and I'm already like, I still think you're amazing. Right now, having spent a lot of time in Brazil, I really like the singing of Elis Regina. Mm-hmm. I've really been fixated on it, and the fact that she is, apparently from stories I've heard, is good at pretending emotions. That's what I've heard about her. I don't know if it's true or not, but she can be like, let me just conjure up the feeling I had another time and bring it right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I think it's interesting, and I think it completely
like when she's
compels
performing?
Me apparently okay. And I've never seen her live. Mm-hmm. I love covering her songs, even her cover songs. I think she sings incredibly, and I think it's really interesting to hear the stories of people who are successful and be like, oh wow, really? You mm-hmm. fake cried? And everybody also cried with you, and it meant something to them. I'm just fascinated mm-hmm. by that. Like, sincerity means a lot to me. Well, but it's interesting, you know, when it's not.
That's stagecraft. I mean, yeah. if you see a great film, you see a great actor performing, they're dropping in and grabbing on to that emotion that had existed in their life, and then they're able to communicate it through yeah. their eyes and words and their and bring yeah. out some emotion in you.
Yeah.
And so when you're on stage, do you think about that, or do you just get up there and just see what comes to you naturally, or your songs connected to certain emotions that have happened before?
My songs, it depends on how recently experience mm-hmm. was, but it also depends, like, I really like to be able to see my audience mm-hmm. because if I see, like, this person clearly had something meaningful that connects with the song, mm-hmm. then, like, if you're crying, I'm crying.
Yeah.
If I can't see you, then I'm like, oh, I remember it was, like, 10 years ago, and it might or might not mean something to yeah. me. So sometimes I feel very disconnected, and it's still meaningful to somebody, but the more that I can actually, like, if I can make eye contact and be like, whoa, I see that, like, you yeah. heard that, and in, I don't know your story, but I know that this connected to your story. That mm-hmm. really pulls me in, and I've cried on stage more times than I'd mm-hmm. like to admit, but it's also really nice when I can get through a whole set without crying, because yeah. I'm like, I would like to dance together. I don't always want to cry together, but
that's,
you know,
good. You know, when I first started out, I wrote a lot of really intense, super political songs, and And I'd be on stage and be like ranting and, you know, like, you know, pissed off. But then there's some days I'd be at a festival and I'd be like, you know, today I kind of just feel like I want to like get naked and throw ice. You know, like I don't want to, you know, at the festival, you know, like, yeah, I want to just be out there and like party, you know, like, hey, let's go, you know. And okay, you got keys to the ice machine. And so I started writing songs that were, began to express my full rainbow of emotion,
yeah,
so that as I was on tour, I could pick and choose like
how
what
I was
feeling
that day
or what was happening in the world, yeah, and be able to respond to it in, yeah, song. And that means like the world to me, because there's some days and some songs that are really close to my heart. Like I've written a lot of songs about my children, and you know, my son Ade has kidney disease. Mm-hmm. His kidneys are failing, and there's some days where I feel really like it's really hard for me. It's really, mm-hmm, super emotional. And those are days when I want to sing those songs. Like I want to tap into that emotion and go there. And then there's other days where I just feel like I can't go there. Yeah. Like I'm not ready in this moment to be that raw.
Yeah.
And so it's good to be able to, you know, have that rainbow of songs that are connected to.
I think that makes a ton of sense. It's because emotions are like a set of chords that you're writing with, a set of things that you're working with as you communicate as, nice, a musician. Nice. And it's not the only thing, for sure. I, mm-hmm, think you and I both, I don't know you that well, mm-hmm, but I think you and I both write fairly emotionally.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important to have both of those. I think, yeah, it's important to write in various chords,
nice,
and keys.
Awesome.
And I think it's important to write in various emotions and to be able to, for yourself and for your audience, to say like, what do we need right now?
Yeah.
In this moment. And not just like, well, I wrote a sad song, so that's what we're doing.
Yeah. All right, audience, what do you guys need right now? Another question for Abigail.
You seem to have such an old soul.
Thanks.
And, you know, who's your mentor?
I journal a lot. Which I guess gives too much credit to me, but I write a lot, and I talk to my friends and my family and the people who care about me a lot. And so even in amidst traveling and amidst going through various things, I have a lot of people to reflect back to me, to listen to what I'm saying and say, it sounds like, mm-hmm, you're saying this a lot. And even in my audience, where I have people say, you know, I've heard you wrote these 5 different songs about being alone. And I'm like, wow, I had no idea that I wrote that until you reflected back to me. So it's, again, community. And sometimes that community is this small, tight-knit, like the people I chose. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's much broader, and it's the people who were willing to come and be a part of my life, and I'm grateful for it. The people who say, I listened to your music, I heard what you were saying, here's what I'm seeing.
And was there ever any one person in particular, like as you were growing up, who was a teacher or a friend or somebody today, or even a musician that you admire that you would consider to be like a mentor?
I wish I could say yes, but no, not yet. I wrote about that recently in my many journaling, like, Lord, send me a mentor, send me a teacher. Like, I'm stubborn, I'm difficult, probably not going to be that. But I have to say no at this point, but I'm definitely open to it.
All right, any other questions?
I have one more.
Okay.
I can kind of follow up on what you were saying.
Sure.
So you grew up in a predominantly homogenous environment, and so what it seems like you're not really that kind of person anymore. So in what role did education play in who you are now? So your education.
The library. The library was everything.
Wow.
I went to the library, and I'm so grateful that it was my family who brought me to the library all the time. We'd read together when we're relaxing, and we go to the library together. When I was a kid, I could pick out almost whatever. And so I remember picking out books that spelled women with a Y, W-O-M-Y-N, and I spelled it like that in third grade and got a bad grade because I spelled women wrong. But I'm like, no, I was reading this very political feminist book that I picked on my own from the library, and many other things like that that I think that
so
reading
parents,
was a
if
huge...
your kids go off the path that you prescribe for them, blame it on the library.
Exactly. Amen. But take them there
Amen
anyways.
Amen for the library.
Take
yeah.
them there anyways.
All right. Do you have any last words for people who might be listening to this podcast?
The pressure is now on.
Yeah.
I was reading a book called The Alchemist. Mm-hmm. I read it in English, and now I'm reading it in Portuguese to practice. And so I'm reading through these ideas again, and they talk a lot about pursuing your personal legend, like the thing that you're truly passionate about, and also following the signs. I just read this book, and I was like, follow the signs. There's Michael Franti. You put him on your feet once, do it. And there's this instinct that's like, don't do the thing that's crazy voice in your head, but like, no. Listen to crazy voice in your head sometimes. You came to my set because I followed the signs and I'm living my personal legend.
Thank you. I think that's great advice. Yeah. All right, how can folks find you? Instagram, Facebook, all
that
stuff?
Oh, my name is so hard to spell.
Well, go for it.
I'm Abigail Staufer. Mm-hmm. Abigail, A-B-I-G-A-I-L.
Yeah.
Staufer, S-T-A-U-F-F-E-R. And that's, you Google it and you're going to find me on Instagram, Spotify, iTunes, my own website, abigailstaufer.com, all of that. Thank you for the opportunity to promote myself.
Yeah, you got it. It's been awesome having you on the show today.
Thank you.
And I'm super excited to see how you grow in music. And I know that you've inspired me to listen more to what you do and to follow what you do, and I'm sure the audience here feels the same way.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Abigail Staufer. From the Bliss Fest up here in northern Michigan, you've been listening to the Stay Human podcast, and we love ya.
I fly you now.
That was awesome.
You're so welcome.
Hey everybody, this is Michael Franti here on the Stay Human podcast, and I've traveled all throughout the world and I've been to many inspiring places, and one of my favorites is Bali. I fell in love with its people and nature the first time that I came here in 2007, and at that time I had a dream to build a place that was dedicated to music, soul, and wellness. And from that, the Soulshine Bali Hotel was born. It's my boutique hotel located in the heart of Bali, surrounded by beautiful rice fields and the most incredible sunsets that you might ever experience. We do over 50 retreats a year, or you can just come here and spend a night on your own. So follow us on Instagram at Soulshine Bali.